Yeah, so finding a comfortable posture. And you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. First, just bringing the attention into your body, feeling yourself sitting. It can be interesting to just see how do you feel your body? What does it feel like when you just try to be aware of it without thinking about it or sort of identifying it? The sensations, the energies. The Buddha talks about the feeling the body as the elements of earth and fire, air and water. But beyond just that, to just notice how there are different sensations and different parts of the body. And being aware of sounds, notice sounds in your own environment and sounds in your own body. If you hear the sound in your own ears, the sound of my voice or anything coming through. And then noticing what your mood or your mind state is right now. And finally connecting with the breath. Just feeling the sensations of breathing either at the nostrils or the belly. Either the touch of air at the nostrils or the movement of the belly. And starting to just feel the rhythm and sensations, the felt physical experience of breathing. When you notice the mind has wandered, just gently bringing the attention back to the breath. Just acknowledging thought without judging or resisting or trying to control. Just using awareness to see what is happening. Connecting again with the breath. Well, I'm sorry I didn't give much instruction there. I just, this is where my control issues come in when I'm teaching. If there's a lot of noise in the background, and in real, you know, if we were all together and there was a lot of noise, I'd be annoyed. And they stopped, but the music seems to have stopped, at least for now. But just like kind of difficult for me to stay focused. It just reminds me, I heard Jack Kornfield talk one time about, you know, years ago he was teaching a retreat and he was about to go and teach the love and kindness meditation, but he was on the phone with his girlfriend at the time and they had a big fight, and then he went into the meditation hall with like 100 people and he's like, okay, so opening your heart and breathing into your heart. And then he would say, like, in between the phrases, he'd be thinking, and yeah, God damn it, what the hell is wrong? You know, she doesn't know what she's, you know, what's wrong with her? And then, and spreading love and kindness to your dear ones, to the difficult person. That God, bitch, but raggedy fart. So that was a good reminder, you know, that, sometimes you got to put on a good show. I'm in step 9 in One Breath at a Time, and in the section on page 200 exactly, called Forgiveness. And and we've been going through step 9 and you know, getting into here again, stuff with my family, and a little, just sort of kind of taking people through the process, you know, sort of going from like blaming everyone else to realizing that, you know, I had to take responsibility. I said when I got sober, particularly as I wrote my first inventory, my feelings began to change. I began to see my own part in the problems I had with my parents, to feel compassion for the difficulty they had raising me. Finally, seeing and accepting my own failures helped me to accept my parents' failures. I realized that they too had parents who were less than perfect, and that they had tried very hard to be good parents. Their emotional limitations weren't something they had chosen. You know, that, you know, when you have that realization, like, oh, my parents have parents, and oh, and their parents, their grandparents, and their parents, and realize, oh, this whole dysfunctional thing, you know, it's been going on for a really long time. And it's, you know, I'm not the first one to catch the, you know, painful end of it. And I say, in that process of passing from a state of holding on to certain beliefs about my parents and finally, and myself, into seeing them on completely different terms, became clear that the only thing that had changed was how I was thinking and feeling. In forgiving my parents, I was freeing myself. Forgiveness is a mostly internal experience. At one day-long retreat I was teaching, people talked a lot about how they didn't want to let someone off the hook, absolve them of responsibility by forgiving them. I think that it's important to draw the distinction between forgiveness and absolution, or condoning. And I think we do get, that's one of the places we get stuck, as if, you know, I'm saying it's okay that someone did something, and it's not that it's, I'm not saying that when I'm forgiving them, I'm not saying, oh, it's okay, you know, you go ahead, you know. I have a line from the Buddha where he says all beings are the owners of their karma. Their happiness and unhappiness depend on their actions, not on my wishes for them. So in the same way, if I don't forgive people, or I do forgive them, either way, it doesn't relieve them of the karmic consequences of their actions. So I think it becomes evident, and you know, maybe this is kind of obvious, maybe we know this already, that forgiveness is really about our own holding on to resentment. And you know, and of course it works in multiple ways. There's forgiving others, but there's forgiving ourselves too, which maybe is even harder, or accepting that we have been forgiven. You know, I talked sometime in the last couple of weeks about being responsible for my brother Michael getting arrested, and you know, that's who I just spent the evening with, you know, and there definitely has been forgiveness. But it comes back to, and this is something Jack Kornfield talks a lot about too, is coming back to seeing that we are the ones who are suffering when we're holding on to a resentment, only holding on to anger, that it really has nothing to do with them. And maybe at some point and in certain situations, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. Because, you know, I think that maybe talking about forgiveness isn't quite, maybe that's not really what's going on when we can't let go. You know, maybe it's not that we are still blaming someone, but maybe it's just that the wound is there and it's painful. And the thought of that person or contact with that person just brings it back up. And we're in a place where it's like, you know, I'm not holding it against you, but it's just not workable for me to have a relationship with you. That's certainly something that happens with people in or out of recovery. So, as I'm looking through these words in my book, and I, you know, they're useful, and I think they point to a bunch of different ideas about, you know, how people get stuck here. But as I read it, I kind of think, you know, sometimes, I mean, this is what happens with spiritual teachings. They can be like too easy, right? And it's something that I try to be on the lookout for, is the like, oh, just do this, you know, just forgive them, just say these words, or remember. I mean, for instance, you know, I talk here about, which I think is significant, like how any of us who ever had a blackout could have done something really unforgivable, could have committed crimes. And, you know, I remember working in a treatment center. This one young woman who was in treatment had killed someone in a car accident when she was drunk. And she was being tried for, vehicular manslaughter or involuntary manslaughter. And part of her being in treatment, I guess, was like trying to look good when she went to court and all that. But that recognition, when I hear that, I'm like, that could have been me. So that's, you know, one of the ways that I can forgive people, when I realize like, that could have been me, you know, there, but for the grace of God, as they say, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think that can help in certain situations, to let go, when to have that kind of compassion when we recognize that it could have been us, or that we think about the things that we've done, or or when we remember that other people have suffered trauma and that's why they acted the way they do, and also that, you know, they still are going to suffer the consequences of their karma. All of that, I think, can be useful. But I don't know that it's anything like necessarily is going to flip a switch in certain circumstances. And again, I refer to Jack, because Jack Kornfield, around this, because that's something he's written a bunch about. And one of the meditations that I use, really the meditation that I use when I do something around forgiveness, is something of his. And one of the things he says is that, you know, forgiveness that he's talking about is not a one-time deal, like you just do this meditation practice and it's over. And that's where I think he is kind of trying to address these kind of traumas where there's a wound that doesn't just pass because we have some insight, some thought, like mental insight. It's more of a, you know, transformative insight when we really let go on that deep level. But that, you know, that doesn't just happen. It really takes time. Yeah. So yeah, it's a tricky question. I don't teach a lot about forgiveness. You know, I'm doing it tonight because that's where I am in the book. But it's not something that I feel like I'm a great, it's not a strong teaching for me. And maybe in some ways, maybe it's not a huge issue for me. I mean, I've got plenty of issues, but, and, you know, on the other hand, I could probably think of one or two people that I've never forgiven. So maybe I'm not entirely honest about that. I don't know. It's something, you know, there's another teacher I know who teaches a lot about that and seemed to be like a big theme. And then I kind of came to realize that the reason it was a big theme for them was because they held a lot of resentments and they had a really hard time forgiving. So, yeah, I think we tend to teach the things that we need to hear. So, that's maybe not a whole lot from me, but on the other hand, this is a topic that is often quite alive for people in the recovery world. So maybe tonight is a good night to open up. And in any case, I do ordinarily open things up, but we've got more time than usual for people to share if they would like to, or you can certainly ask me a question or say something. I you know, anything anybody says, I usually chime in anyway, taking my, you know, privilege as the so-called teacher. But love to hear if anybody has anything to say on forgiveness or lack of forgiveness. And if not, you're perfectly welcome to bring up anything you'd like to talk about.
Hey, Kevin, it's Fordham here.
Oh, Fordham. Wow.
How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, you know.
How's the East Coast treating you over there? You're still on the East Coast, I guess.
I am on the East Coast, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, the Christmas city.
Very nice. Very nice. Yes. Yeah, I saw you posting something with your daughter that's at the Lincoln Memorial there.
Yeah, we were there the other day. She's living in D.C. So.
The world's opening up again, I guess, a little bit.
She's
travels over there. What's that?
She's over there. You can't see her, and I'm not turning the camera.
Okay, yeah, no worries. But how are the travels? The travels are okay? I mean, traveling around, masks, all that?
Yeah, it's, yeah. Planes are just as annoying as ever. And traffic is just as annoying. Driving from D.C. to Pennsylvania is just I-95.
Yeah.
A horrible highway. But it's fine. And yeah, I mean, it's. I definitely feel safe. You know, we've both been vaccinated, and more people are like, you know, hey, we're outside. I keep saying, like, read the CDC recommendations. You don't have to wear a mask outside if you're not close to people. So yeah, it's been great.
Like it's, you know, I've just been feeling that, and this is a little bit off base, but
go ahead.
Always off base. Yeah, I'm always in left field, but you know, it's like been this extended retreat, you know, not only here with you on Tuesdays and Fridays, but like, oh, and it's this, oh, this was, must feel like when you go on a really extended retreat, like a year, like you're talking about forgiveness in this way of like, it comes and fits and starts. And it's not just one big, huge event, you know, like recovery is a process. It's like, oh, I keep coming back to this. I keep coming back to the breath because my mind keeps going. And we want, you know, recovering drug addict. It's like, yeah, I want it. Whether it's a pill or bottle or baggie or my mind, I want it to shut off. But anyway, it's great to hear you. And talking about Jack Kornfield, I don't know if this is actually from him, but I've seen it attributed to him. He talked about, or the quote was, forgiveness is giving up all hope of a better past. Yeah. So it's a great little twist on it, you know? And
yeah.
And for me, I did a wonderful forgiveness exercise with actually my girlfriend, love my life, Lisa, who runs Dharma Talks. I can't do that quite. I don't have the patience that you do. Wonderful. Okay. Yeah. But she ran this little circle one time and talking about forgiveness and the difference between, like you were saying, forgiveness. There's a difference between forgiveness and absolution. There's a difference between forgiveness and justice. You know, forgiveness is a lot of times, like it says in Serenity Prayer, or not Serenity Prayer, excuse me, the St. Francis Assisi prayer, like, you know, when you forgive, you're forgiven sort of in this personal way, right? So, but she did this great exercise where like, pick a person that you want to forgive. And I picked the younger self, you know, that sort of young, dumb, you know, full of drugs self. And I realized I was holding on to not forgiving that using self of mine as an, a way to, as an excuse not to do any work here in the present moment. Mm. It was really, I was this subtle, oh, that, man, I wish I had done things different back in the, you know, and I was like, wow, the first person I got to forgive, especially in light of sort of eight and nine is like, wow, yeah, forgive that kid that was young, dumb, full of drugs and, you know, just experience in life, didn't know any better. So anyway, it's great to hear you tonight, man, and safe travels, you know, back to the West Coast from the East Coast, all that.
Well, it's good you brought that up too, because the next section of the book is about making amends to yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's right on, you know, that's maybe the hardest one. Not the hardest, but one of the hard ones for us. And like you say, like that old self, you know, so it's interesting that you say that it was affecting making, sort of, it sounds like making you more passive or like, how was that working? How
did you see well, that? And this was several years ago, but this idea of, you know, I wasn't moving forward with other amends or other ways of living. You know, that was a big thing that my sponsor impressed upon me while doing step nine. I remember him pouring this cup of tea and saying, this is not something we do once. This is the way we're going to live. You know, and it's just such a vivid memory of, oh, right. Like as the flowing tea, like this is the flow. We're going to continue to try to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I had this kind of blockage of myself being like, oh, that younger self, if I had just, you know, not done drugs for 20 years, oh, I would have been this, I would have been that. And to let go of that in that way of like, let go of the ambition of the past. It's gone. All you can do is reframe it now. Forgive yourself and others for, you know, I was trying to do the best I could. I was trying to cope with whatever I had around, which was a tremendous amount of, you know, marijuana and booze and occasional psychedelics, you know, and I thought, and then that stopped working. So it was like, and then it made things worse, you know? So yeah, I think it was just more of a general opening up to, oh, right. I keep using that as like a psychic excuse to be like, well, you know, you could have been, you should have been, you could have, should have, would have. And then it's like, oh, right. Your real fear is just trying to pick up now, you know, start from wherever you are right now. You know, it's like, oh, right. That I've been using this excuse of like, oh, if only that kid didn't smoke for 20 years. It was like, yeah, you did. And now you're sober for, you know, going on 15 years now. So get moving towards whatever it is you're moving towards, you know,
yeah.
Which is more difficult than sitting on a resentment and petting it. And, you know, it's like little Precious, like from the movie or whatever, that crazy
Yeah.
stuff, you know, oh, I had this little resentment. I could just, I'm so familiar with it. And it's like, oh, if I put that down now, this is very scary to have to, oh, what is going on in the moment? And what do I want to do in the future moment maybe? And of course that's dictated, you know, by the past, and, but you can keep moving on. So there's that hope. And I think that echoes in the Dharmic sense, right? That we're not slaves. We might be, you know, inhabit or inheritors of our karmas, but we're not slaves to it per se, that it's dictating it to us. That's why we sit, because we can let that stuff come and not act out or suppress it. We can live with it in the moment, you know, which is very difficult, but it can happen.
I have to imagine that almost every person at a certain point in the aging process thinks, I could have been somebody different, you know. And certainly many of us as addicts think, I could have been somebody better, you know, or my life could have been better.
I like the different thing that you just said. You know, it's like, if I only took in that, taken that path, and then that's the, you know, the classic, the two roads in the wood diverge. It's like, you can, that's the strange thing of our linear existence. You can only do one path. But yeah. I found from my work with sponsees and, you know, a little bit of rehab, it's like, wow, I can actually help people, like that's me karmically, like, oh, there is a kid that's, you know, getting sober at 20 something. And I'm like, dude, trust me, you don't want to spend another 10 years using like I did. It doesn't get any better. You're just going to go to jail more. You know, that's pretty much what you're looking at, you know. And I feel so enlivened by being like, wow, let me help this kid out. It's like, and they, you know, a lot of times musicians or whatever, and you save them from 20 years of, you know, back and forth, you know, like, you know, geez, anybody that's read your book, like, hey, yeah, it's fun, but it's a lot of trouble. And that joy of like, oh, wow, maybe there's a little bit of another life I can vicariously live through some young guy that's, you know, getting on track, you know, 10, 20 years before. Yeah.
And that's, maybe that's
work with that.
That's what parents try to do. And that's what teachers try to do. And that's what sponsors try to do, is help people to avoid the mistakes we've made. And rarely do we succeed. But
and I think, you, I mean, geez, I enjoy and also appreciate you putting something out in the universe that, you know, what if Shakespeare said something about like that, putting something out, you never know how far it's going to affect. But, you know, your book, like touching many people, that's what how it did for me. I remember coming up to Spirit Rock and just coming up and being like, thank you, man. And you were like, what are you thanking me for? I was like, we're writing the book and just, you know, being a beacon of some sort, you know, to like, oh, right, this can be done. And the musician lifestyle and the recovery and the Dharma, so, you know, very interrelated. So anyway, thanks again for tonight, man. It's just great to hear you on this step. And there are a lot of subtle things there of navigating. It's not absolution. It's not justice. This is forgiveness, but it's also amends. And where do we sort of live with that? You know, the living amends, but it's also concrete, you know, financial. Or...
And there's the pain that I carry with me. You know, it's that pain that how much pain am I carrying, that is I'm carrying as a way of thinking that I'm getting them by being angry with them.
Right. The classic drinking the poison and trying to kill somebody else. And in the Buddhist cosmology, it's the picking up the hot rock, right? And before you can throw it, you can burn yourself. Oh, man. You know,
but there's a second image in that sutta besides the hot rock, which you don't often hear, which is it's picking up a poop, a turd. And so with the hot rock, you wind up burnt. With the turd, you wind up stinky. You know?
That's much more apropos to our culture, because you don't really burn yourself so much. You're more, oh, man, I keep holding. I really need to let this go or wash my hands of it. So I guess, you know, I don't want to be like Macbeth, you know, I can't get this off. How do we
right. Boy, you're throwing down the Shakespeare tonight. And,
Lisa and I went on a hike today and I had a huge cup of tea with dinner. So thanks for letting me blah, blah, blah.
So you reminded me of something, and I hope people don't, I'm enjoying this conversation. I hope people enjoy it. Fordham is a very experienced, not only Dharma practitioner, but he's virtually a master of divinity. As well as
from Naropa, asterisk from
as well as being a terrific blues musician who was kind enough to put me on his recent record. And
I'm telling you, that track is getting a lot of play. It's great. You play the teacher. We go through the it's track seven.
Factors. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, it's track seven, but it's called Factors of Enlightenment. So Kevin says the, you know, factor, and then I repeat him, and we had a little jam. So check it out.
Yeah.
A little song of real. Anyway.
But you reminded me of something in my daily practice, which, you know, I go through the daily contemplations each day. I'm of the nature to age, to sicken, and to die. And the fourth one, I've changed a little bit for myself just to make it simpler. So I just say, I must be separated from everyone and everything that I hold dear. But one of the ways that I've been thinking about that is being separated from my past. So it's not just separated from stuff. It's not just like, oh, my guitar will break, or, you know, or my daughter will leave me, but it's that I'll be separated from all my experiences. Like I'm those are all gone, you know, and that I, you know, because I'll be like, oh, I wish I could go back to, you know, Ireland that time or whatever, or being that one gig where everything clicked, and just like, oh, I have to be separated from everything and in my life. Well, and as you brought up karma, you know, that's the great thing that Tanisaro Bhikkhu, you know, really drives home the point that the only time you can affect your karma is in the present moment. And yet we're always like thinking about our past karma, which you can't, and we're hoping for our future karma. And then like, oh, I was spacing out in this moment. So, you know, I didn't create the karma in this moment that I wanted to create the positive karma. And in the same, that's exactly what you were describing about, you know, being, you know, frustrated about your past and then not really applying the recovery in your present moment and really making the best of your present recovery moment.
Yeah. And I think you're intersecting, you know, or integrating, excuse me, the Dharma with the steps. It really emphasizes that point that you're making, like, okay, yeah, we do step 8 and 9 and then 10 comes right after that. And we got to start with ourselves again and again and again. It's pretty amazing. And when you reach that moment, sometimes I'm sitting and it's just like, dude, this moment right here, this matters. And that persistence of memory, like you're talking about, is like, wow, that's all my story and my karma. But, you know, I can think about that in the present moment, or I can think about the future in the present moment. But, and that wonderful moment within the moment of like, oh my God, this moment is so paramount. And then, wait, there's another moment, you know, you kind of get confused. Yeah. So just keep sitting and keep breathing one breath at a time.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, thank you, my man.
Yeah,
so great.
Thanks.
Nice. Safe travel.
Thanks for showing your face.
Everyone's.
I was remembering, I want to give people this link again, because since you're in Colorado, I was thinking about Back from Broken. Have you listened to that?
I just did that, Kevin.
You did it already?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, never mind. So, but
you can do it still if you want.
Well, just to say that Back from Broken is a podcast. It's on Colorado Public Radio that I was recently on, and it's not a lot of Buddhism and the 12 steps. It's really a lot about my life, and they get into my like problems when I was in high school and stuff like that. And they edit it very carefully. And if you're interested in hearing sort of more of my story, that I don't know, you probably get enough of my story here, but it's a little, you know, sort of nicely done. So, well, there's still time left if someone else would like to speak.
Quickly before someone else speaks, I think I found the right thing that you'll be doing in Boulder virtually on Tuesday. Is that right?
Let's see. Where is it?
It's right
out. David Chernikov. Yeah, that should be it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Great.
And he asked me to give it a name for the talk. So the talk is called present moment, wonderful moment. And it's going to be about why we keep thinking, even though we know better, and maybe how to deal with it. So, I mean, sort of standard stuff, but anyway, I rarely prepare a talk, but they asked me for a title. So I was like, okay, but get ready. Other person, people like to speak up.
Hello, Sangha. I'm Julie. I wouldn't mind sharing. Thank you so much, Kevin and Sangha. I've been missing a few sessions because I've been out of town visiting my sister who's moving to Cape Town, South Africa. So if I miss here, it's not because I'm not thinking about you. I am. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and webinars, as I always do, in the first part of my day. So I'm not, I don't know to whom to attribute these two threads, but I'll just bring up two things I heard in the last few days that really resonated with me that can be tied into forgiveness. And one is the only amends is changed behavior. And I don't usually like only statements. I only like not only statements, but that really resonated with me. Amends, the only amends are changed behaviors. Anyway, for whatever that does for anybody, I think that can be tied into forgiveness. And another that I heard from a talk and a teaching was in discussing self-love and self-care. And a definition or a perspective of self-care that I've always, that I like very much, is to treat oneself how you would treat a dear friend. But what I heard about self-love and self-compassion is a deep gratitude for one's own existence. And that really got me, because I don't hold that space consistently. And I can see if one is really deeply grateful for one's own existence, then one would want to be forgiving, because it is not self-love, self-compassion, self-care to hold that poop or to hold that hot coal or whatever it is that stinks metaphorically or olfactorily. And to really show that compassion and self-care and self-love, and to be able to radiate that outward toward others and be a healing force in the world. I think one really does have to practice forgiveness. And that is about really being deeply grateful for one's own existence, for honoring every inhale and every exhale, because at one point that stops. And our greatest support is our breath, because once that stops, life stops. So thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, it's, you know, one of the first things, if you ever go to a like Tibetan teaching, like that's one of their first teachings, is the preciousness of human life. And they have some images for how rare it is, because they have this idea that all beings are being reborn, and that, you know, you could be reborn as a lot of different things. There are a lot more ants around than there are humans, and so the idea that human life is extremely precious, and of course then the point they take out of that, the lesson they get out of that, is you better practice really hard, because this doesn't, you know, you should make the most of it and become enlightened or do whatever you can to evolve, because it's so rare. That's a great, you know, whatever motivates you to practice and to appreciate. I think it's interesting. I mean, you know, gratitude, I think, is there is an implication that one has not earned it when they're given something that we're grateful for, things that we just kind of have been given to us. And life is certainly something that has been given to us. Maybe we've earned it in a previous lifetime, but as far as we can see. It's very precious. The other thing you said, I forget what it was now, because I had a thought about it, but anyway, when people say two things, it's hard for me to hold on to them both. It's hard for me to hold on to one, actually, so appreciate it. Yeah, it's good to see you, Julie. Maybe time for one more comment. It's interesting. Now I'm seeing some of you East Coast people now, and I'm feeling a lot of compassion for you tonight. Lori and Dana, for staying up till now 11 o'clock. I know, it all depends on your lifestyle. It's not that I don't stay up till 11 o'clock, it's just that I'm not nearly as mindful at 11 o'clock as I tend to be at 7. My mindfulness tends to slide away the more tired I get.
Hi.
Hey, Anne.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Hey. Hi. I've been thinking a lot about this, forgiveness. I've been sort of working 8th and 9th step for the last couple of months, so kind of along with the book and the talks and stuff. And one thing that I realized that happened in 2009, and I didn't realize it until I was sort of going through this process around amends with my father, who died 12 years ago, but tough one. In 2009, I attended a conference where Thich Nhat Hanh was the main speaker. It was psychotherapy and mindfulness, you know, a long time ago. And I had known of him and I'd heard a tape of his, and I was so intrigued. I would listen closely to the CD player, or it was cassette. And so I had that opportunity, and he led us through a practice that really helped me understand this idea of, you know, the trauma that goes back generations and it's passed on. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the karmic, you know, the causes and conditions, and it's passed on. And not until I started working through this in the last couple of months did I realize that, oh my God, that's the first, and it was so moving and so transformative. That's the first time that I was able to have some compassion for my father. And that I was like 15 years sober, I think, something like that, you know? And that didn't happen, you know, and that was a turning point in my relationship with my father and my relationship to my views about my dad and what happened and how, you know, the whole thing. And But I didn't see it until just this last month, last couple of months, when I realized that, oh my God, I went through that practice. Mm-hmm. And wow, I see it now. I don't know. There's been a lot of healing going on over here. been writing about it, and you know, it's that piece you talked about. You know, when it's really about, you can't let go of something, it's not about forgiveness necessarily, because the wounds are so deep. And it was that practice that was led by Thich Nhat Hanh that I think now really helped crack the ice. Yeah. Or the resentment, or I think I was holding on to resentment. I didn't even know what a resentment was, but yeah. I was pissed. But I think I turned a lot of it inward, even in recovery, even in sobriety. So anyway, thank you for the Thank you for your class in the last year and a half or 2 years or however long it's been. Long time.
Yeah, it's like, I know it's like.
And I don't know what it's called, but.
What was called?
The meditation.
But. Oh, the meditation. Oh, I see. Because people are going to be like, what is that? I need that. Yeah.
Right.
Greedy mind. it just seems like there's this like way in which we think like, I'm not giving you that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you that. I'm pissed at you. Why should I give you that?
And I don't even think you know it consciously. You know, I wasn't thinking that. Yeah. I mean, maybe I don't know, but I think I might have been. Yeah. It's a long time. The guy's been dead for 12 years.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter. They never die.
No, and you know, and it's just like living kindness. I was thinking it's like living forgiveness. It's a continual unfolding, you know, on the path. Yeah.
Well, there are some nice comments too there. Fordham gave us the analogy that I was thinking of about the how rare is human existence. The blind sea turtle who surfaces once every 100 years.
Oh yeah.
Or on the surface of the ocean floats a golden yolk. It is rarer to gain a precious human birth than it is for that turtle to surface with its head coming out through the yolk. So that's the Tibetan image for how rare it is. And Dana has given us something from Reinhold Niebuhr. Oh, we're giving us the final form of love. And Jean-Baptiste Massieu, I don't know who that is. Gratitude is the memory of the heart. Sweet. Thanks, Dana. Well, then there we go. God and karma willing. And 737 Max willing, I will be back in my office on Tuesday morning. Yeah, I that's what I flew out. I was like, uh-oh. Did I leave a will? but anyway, my work here is done. I've left enough books. You'll all have to get along without me. But maybe not. Actually, I just heard from Shambhala that they're talking about, I'm talking to them about publishing Living Kindness, and the editor said, well, we usually like to work with an author, not just on one book. Do you have any other ideas for books? And I was like, oh, no, not another one. Yeah. The only other book I have in me is I'm a Bad Buddhist. The Bad Buddhist book, I think, might be the one. It's the one my wife has always wanted me to write. I don't know why she would want me to write that. What she thinks, what would she know about bad Buddhists? Don't tell. So happy Mother's Day, moms, all of you. I know many of you there are moms, even moms of little ones and big ones and maybe even gone ones. I don't know. I hope not. But yeah. Sweet. We gave my daughter and I gave my wife her favorite thing for Mother's Day. We gave her the house to herself, a day off from having to see us. That's the biggest gift of all to the mother. Oh, great. Oh, yeah, go away. Thank you. Perfect. I mean, it's different for every mother, I know, but some of them like quiet time. All right, you guys, thanks for hanging out and being, you know, supporting, you're helping me get through, you know, being on the road. So I think next time I'm going to kind of let my friends handle this for me. So